was there a point that you realized from experience, you know, your skin color might be a problem for other people?
I want to say it wasn't until about my mid-20s that I actually realized, being born and raised in Bloomington, I didn't go to school in like a diverse community. It was predominantly white. And the things that did occur in my childhood, I didn't know what it was. I just thought, you know, oh, I got in trouble, or oh, maybe I did something wrong. I always kind of put it on myself. And then mid-20s, I realized, like, I'm not bothering anybody. Why are you so mad at me? Like, you know, it was a work situation. All three of us had made the same error on the computer about a couple days apart. And we were talking about it, like, yeah, what happened to you when you didn't press that button or whatever, you know, you didn't do the thing. And they wrote me up and gave me a sanction and said, one more time, I'm going to get fired. And the girl that was next to me was like, well, he just told me, he just, you know, reminded me not to do it again. And I said, well, have you done it before? And she was like, well, yeah, you know, once or twice. And I keep forgetting. And I was like, oh, well, I'd never, you know, I never made that same mistake before. So why am I getting, you know, why is my next step getting fired? So I had to sit and think, like, you know, what's different about me? What's wrong with me still, you know, internally taking that? Like, am I not doing my job right? And then had a conversation with my aunt, and she was like, honey, you know, if you kind of look back and think of situations that are similar to that, where you were picked out or you were the spotlight for other reasons and other people weren't, it's because of the color of your skin. You know, that's crazy to me. I grew up with white people. My close friends were white. You know, I've never had a black teacher. I had my first black coach or anybody of leadership was junior high, my track coach. Taking in what she said and then other situations happening, I was like, yeah, this is a thing. No matter, even though these are the people I grew up with, you know, these are some people's parents that have known me all my life. It was weird.
Let me have you go back a little bit. When you were younger, I don't know how you said it, get in trouble for things, or you were doing things that are wrong and you just thought, oh, I did something wrong. Are you suggesting now that you look back on it, maybe there was more to it than that?
Yeah, I'll never forget. And I'm actually going to say that to give people a perspective of, you know, my life here. I went to Bent School for elementary school. And there was one incident on the playground. We were just playing. There was about a group of five girls and one boy. And we were outside, and I don't know how much you can say on the radio, but we were being ridiculous. And we were like playing like medic or ambulance. And one of the girls was kicking the little boy in his private parts. And then we'd pick him up and be like, get him to the hospital. We're being ridiculous. So this happened like about three times until he like really started crying. And then I was one of the people that was carrying him to the next hospital location or whatever. And yeah, in that sense, like, okay, that was not right. That's somebody's kid. Like, as a mom, I'd be pissed. You know, I totally get it. And in that moment, I never physically hit him, but I was accomplice. When he was crying on the playground, the staff comes over and she goes, what's going on? We tell him, he tells him in between like sobbing tears. She takes us all in the office, all the girls. And she goes, now tell me what happened. So now I'm in the office. I tell her exactly what happened, my part that I played in, and I'm a kid. I don't really know much about like fabricating. Plus they're outside, they're watching us, so they see us, but they don't know exactly what we're doing to him. And she goes, I go, you know, I didn't hit him, I was just carrying him, but I mean, we were doing something that wasn't nice, you know, it wasn't very nice. And she goes, well, that's not what the other girls are saying. They're saying you did it, just you. And I look and I see my good friend, she's already out of the principal's office in the hallway, sobbing tears, bawling. I'm not crying because I'm like, well, I didn't do anything, but I'm sorry. You know what I mean? I'm sorry he's hurt. And they're like, yeah, they said you did it. And I just look at her and she looks at me in my eyes, my friend, and she looks down and puts her head down. I will never forget that day because I was like, why did you say that? Like, I'm just thinking, why would you say that? And I was like, I'm trying to plead my case. And then I start crying because now I'm going to get in trouble. That's all I'm thinking. I'm going to get in trouble when I get home. principal tells my mom. My mom asks me what happened. And I think that was the first day I learned that I could kind of like confide in my parents, like whether I did something wrong or not, because she was like, she sat me down and she was like, listen, you tell me what happened. I want to hear it from you before I say anything else. And I told her exactly what I told the principal. Carried him here and there, and so-and-so hit him in his privates every time, a few times until he started crying. And she goes, I believe you. Yeah, there's, she says, like, there's something else going on, and I'll take care of it. That's all I ever heard about it. Never got in trouble, you know, at home. But they did I get an in-school suspension where you have to, like, sit downstairs for the day out of class? Nobody else. None of the other girls, just me. Once I got conscious of my surroundings and my reality, that's when I realized that that moment plays over and over in my head. Because I don't know what I could have done or would have done, but I just think to myself, like, if only I had known then, could I have stood up for myself as, like, what was I, like, 7, 8-year-old kid? And if I did, what would have mattered? Would it have made it worse? I don't know, but I do wish, though, like, now that I'm an adult, that I could remember the playground guard, like, our, what do they call them, like, the safety guard's face. So I could tell her to this day, like, I know what that was, and that was bogus. Like, and she probably wouldn't even remember, but I'll never forget.
Okay, you talked about at work, a similar incident happened, I guess, where you were singled out. What makes me think about what probably gets says a lot is, oh, Candace, you sure that's the reason? Was it, you know, or even at work, are you sure you were singled out because it wasn't overt? Mm-hmm. Oh, you're just playing the race card.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Could you talk about being told you're just playing the race card?
I am always self-conscious, and I fear being labeled the angry Black woman stereotype, the confrontational stereotype. So when these things happen to me, there's probably 1,000 other situations that could have also added up to that from the outside looking in, but I would never label it that because I would already first think what you just asked me. Maybe I'm just playing the race card. Does that mean, is it true or not? I can't really say. Personally, I feel like unless I can really ask a person their intentions, it's hard for me in good faith to stand on it and be like, yeah, that's actually what it was. But as I'm learning, that's an internal thing. I'm not always the problem. And I think society likes to push it back on people of color, Black folks, Latin Americans, Latinx community, and say, it's you, so they don't have to take ownership of something that they've done. And if you're kind of raised in that attitude, then I feel like that's another way of saying your voice doesn't matter. The things that come out of your mouth can't be true. That's another way to demean you and take power from you. So you won't speak up again when something is worth saying. So I kind of weigh out the middle ground. And that's the reason why those specific incidents stand out to me.
I'm hearing something really interesting. You say by, I don't know if it's by nature or you just picked up subtly early on that you didn't want to be a stereotype.
Mm-hmm.
What does that do to you internally to have to go, wait a minute, I don't want to be a stereotype. How do I want to react to this? As opposed to someone who just, okay, take a deep breath. You don't want to be angry. You say, take a deep breath. I don't want to be the angry Black woman. It's subtle, but there is a difference. How does that affect you?
It's like a burden. If you take half of the normal things that adults stress about day to day and add on like another 100 pounds, that's the best way I can verbalize it. Because like you said, not only when I'm in public do I have to think about my personal interactions with people and how they'll perceive me, but also when you, like, a person with anxiety, like, is this person gonna like me? But then on top of that, I have to add, does this person not like my skin color? And if they don't, are they going to react to me negatively? are they going to put me in a position to feel uncomfortable, and I don't know why, and I won't know why because it's never outwardly said. So I have to do life plus, like life plus race, life plus institutional, you know, setbacks, and life plus systematic setbacks.
That sounds weary.
And but say to teach your children how to, you know, navigate through that. I'm over such a hump where, okay, I can kind of speak for myself. You know, I've got a little voice in me now, finally, after years and years of keeping it inside and like not speaking about it. Now I have to figure out how to get that in my children before something traumatic happens to them where they could have just said something or spoke out or recognized something was wrong and got out of the situation. Now I have to figure and navigate that for them as well. As a mother, like, that makes me beyond nervous.
Can you talk about how you do talk with your children about race and society?
That's difficult to do because my parents ended up here when they met in Bloomington. Again, predominantly white. The conversations that we had were not about that. My mother mostly left that out. And when she said she would go handle it, I now know that that's what that meant. You know, there was no explanation. So I have no example. So what I now go off of is I try and get as much information as I possibly can. I don't know everything and I don't have all the answers, but I can tell with my children's personalities that my son is more receptive than my daughter, and both of them are like the 1% in their school. So private school and a public school, but mostly Latinx community is where my son goes. And my daughter, there's like one other person of color in her class. So she is still at the point where she's really quiet and internalized. So if something were to happen, just like I was when I was young, she's not going to see it. She's not going to understand. And when I say things like, did you see what happened? Like if we're watching a channel, do you see what just happened there? And she's like, well, why were they being so, you know, why would they talk to him like that? She should just do this, this, and this. And I have to stop and say, this is what makes it hard. Because as much as white people want to teach their children that there is no color and say, oh, you don't judge people by their color, you know, there is no color, ignore color. You can't, because then on the flip side, how do I explain to my child? There's no other way to explain to her the dynamic if I don't say, well, this white person did this and this black person cannot react in the way you just said because she's going to have this type of punishment as opposed to if it were the other way around. I have to explain it that way for her to get it.
How much does that just kill you to see what you have to tell your children?
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It pisses me off that I literally would have to, that very soon I'm going to have like a police training or something for my son to tell him how to conduct himself or help him conduct himself when he's like out driving and he gets pulled over. Those type of conversations are something that I never had that with my parents. So it feels like you're angry at an invisible force that if you could get your hands on it, you would just move it out of the way. But there's nothing there. If everybody can't grab this thing, then does it really exist? You know, if that curtain that you want to move, and it takes so many people to get it out of your way, if everybody can't grab it, then we can't move it. And I feel like it's not fair. And I know people hear that a lot. Oh, it's unfair. It's unfair. And it's not like a woe is me thing. It's like, why don't you have to go and sit your kid down before they get their license and say, listen, you know, it's going to be easier if you do this, we hope. Or you might be safer if you do it like this, we hope. Because I can't even give him straight, hardcore answers like do this, this, and this, and you'll be fine. I can't even say that.
Meaning you can't guarantee if he does that, everything will be fine. Is that what you're saying?
Right, right. I have to speculate and say, well, you should do that. You know, if you do it, you might be okay. And that's like this, that's the scary part. That's the frightening part of America that myself as a black person lives in.
You talked when you were younger, your mom sounded like she intentionally shielded you from that. Why do you think she did that?
Yeah, she's a firm believer of children not worrying, not being in adult business or not having to worry about adult concerns. So I wish I had the information I do now then. I would have made a lot of different choices, especially as far as the people I was around and the places I went. I probably would have never did it.
I'm going to switch some gears here. 2014, Michael Brown was killed. Tamir Rice, Trayvon Martin, Sandra Bland, Eric Garner, all of these names were happening nationally. The protests were there, and a few people thought, we're going to have that conversation. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a change now, and it really didn't. It did for a short time, and then it just kind of went away. Why is it different now than 6 years ago?
It started out like I feel like some of the businesses is just crumbs. Let's just tell them that we're with them. Tell them that we understand. Not do anything. No action. And then as more places get called for boycott, now that we have social media, oh, we don't go to this store anymore. We don't go to that store anymore. You know, as more people of color start taking their money away from businesses and stop demanding that we boycott businesses, the money is hit. And they're saying, oh, no, let's donate to somewhere now. So they know that we really mean, you know, we're really putting our foot where our mouth is. They had riots back in my parents' day, the 70s, and then Selma marches. You know, there's been forms like this, but each time it got serious and the money was hit, what happened? The civil rights movement after the riot. Don't quote me on dates in history, but there are facts. If you do look it up, there was the Selma March, and then something, a big situation happened, and then they had like a riot down south, and then that's when the civil rights movement began, and they actually signed the civil rights action. There's two other riots that happened with like a big change right after it. And each time, if you follow history, whenever the money is hit, whenever property, not necessarily even property, but anytime the city says they can't afford it, that's when somebody enacts a new law to like appease us, I feel. And I think this time they're not just going to take a crumb. We are not, because I'm not, you know, I'm not going to be happy about it until I don't have to have the conversation with my kids.